We're all full of lies. Mama, we're meant for the flies. And right now they're building a coffin your size. Mama, we're all full of lies. Well, mother was the warden to my legs and to my tongue. You should have raised a baby girl. I should have been a better son. If you could count on the infection, naked, amputated ones, you should have been. I could have been a better son. And when we can real blame.
Chapter 28. I froze. Stiff. Still. I wanted her to say my name. I'd given myself away. Deliberately. I wanted her to say my name. I wanted her to call out to me, to say, Marco, I love you. I miss you. I'm still your... Oh, God. I had messed up. The plan. I'd ruined it. Just to hear her say my name. I'd been fooling myself. I couldn't do it.
It's okay, Marco.
A gentle voice said. But not my mom. Rachel.
It's okay, man. It's okay.
Then, everything happened at once. Above the lip of the mountaintop, he rose. Grotesque. Half sky blue, half the color of bare rock. Visser 3 climbed up.
Well, well, well,
he said.
What's this? Visser 1, perched on the edge of a free Hork-Bajir colony? Chatting amiably with two free Hork-Bajir and, unless I miss my guess, an Andalite?
She spun to face him. No fear.
It's over, you incompetent fraud. My loyal ships are above us. So are mine.
Visser 3 hissed.
And they will blow your ships from the sky. So typical of you. You think only of brute violence. Fool. My ships are making a sensor record. They have recorded this valley, this colony of free Hork-Bajir. What do you think the Council of 13 will say when they see it?
Visser 3 showed no emotion. Most likely, he couldn't. Visser 1 reached into her backpack. Out came not a weapon, but what looked a bit like a cell phone.
This is Visser 1,
she said.
Attack! Yes, by all means, attack me,
Visser 3 said with a laugh.
My ships, too, are making a sensor record. A record of the traitor, the former Visser 1, firing on loyal Yerks.
Suddenly, the sky overhead seemed to part, like a cloth being torn at the seam. And there appeared a ship like none I had ever seen. Huge! Larger than Visser 3's blade ship. It had 8 pods arranged around a central cylindrical core. 4 massive engines bunched at the rear, blazing blue fire.
A Nova-class Empire ship?
Visser 3 gasped. Just then, streaking out of the west, came a stream of smaller ships, Visser 3's bugfighters. Visser 1 whirled to watch them, a swarm moving quickly across the back of the mountain range. Among them, a giant battle axe, the blade ship of Visser 3. The squadrons flew low over the colony.
Visser 3,
my mother yelled.
You are under arrest for criminal incompetence.
Traitor!
Visser 3 roared. He lunged, front claws snapping. Visser 1 drew a Dracon beam. Visser 3's bugfighters sped toward Visser 1's descending armada. The battle erupted. The sky was ripped by massive Dracon cannon firing, as bugfighters and the blade ship circled around Visser 1's Empire ship. Visser 1 fired. Visser 3 sliced.
Ah!
A sizzling hole appeared in Visser 3's color-shifting shell. My mother screamed. She staggered and fell. Her clothes were stained red.
No!
I cried. I leapt. Leapt at Visser 3. Head down. Horns ready.
Marco, stop!
Rachel cried.
It's the plan. It has to happen. It has to happen. She has to...
No!
I slammed into the chameleon morph. It jerked back. Visser 3 staggered. 3 legs crumpled. Visser 1 fired. The shot missed Visser 3. It hit me. Searing pain.
There was a neat semicircle of flesh gone from my haunch. I staggered, blinded and disoriented by the pain.
Destroy the colony! The colony!
My mother screamed into her communicator.
Don't fire on Visor 3's ship! The colony! Kill them all! Kill them all!
Pathetic attempt! You can't hope to conceal your treason!
Visor 3 said. Dracon cannon were firing from the sky above. The Empire ship was blasting the ground, firing at what they thought was a colony of Freehork Bajir. A hologram. Eric the Chi had created the illusion. And now, as the Yurks fired, he created the illusion of Hork Bajir burning, falling, dying. But the laws of physics could not be denied. The massive Dracon energies were not descending deep into a valley. They were hitting the mountain peak, only a few hundred feet from us.
Crack!
The ground shuddered. And suddenly, the ground was falling away. A crack in the very rock itself. A huge fissure opened up. I staggered to my feet, crippled by the pain of my wound. The fissure had separated us. Visor 3, and now an army of rushing, eager Hork Bajir controllers on one side. Rachel and Tobias trapped there with them. I was on the other side of the fissure. So was Visor 1. My mother. We were alone. She stood with her back to the cliff, raging.
Too late, Visor 3! Too late to stop me!
Then, calling into her communicator,
detach a fighter to get me off this rock!
Rachel and Tobias were backed against their own dead drop. Hork Bajir hemmed them in, attacking relentlessly. In seconds, it would be over. All over. My plan. Done. Failed. Rachel and Tobias would die. Visor 3 would live. And Visor 1? Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a bug fighter roaring out of the sky, rocketing down toward us. I turned to face her. Visor 1, the leader of the initial invasion of Earth. She stared at me. She moved to aim the weapon at me. I lowered my head and felt the power in my legs. It would be a 100-foot drop. I love you, I whispered. And then, I lunged.
The boy,
she whispered, amazed.
It's the boy.
Chapter 29. I lunged. The Dracon beam moved. Her finger tightened. Too slow. She was too slow.
I would hit her a split second before she could fire. I would hit her with all the power I possessed, and she would fly backward into emptiness and... A flash of orange and black. It appeared over the lip of the cliff. So fast! The tiger hit me. Claws retracted. It hit me in my side and knocked me off my feet. Spinning, I saw the Dracon weapon aimed right at me, following me, ready to fire. And then, from the sky, a bird dropped, wings folded back, talons out. It slashed at Visor One's face.
Ah!
She cried. She clutched at bloody tracks on her cheeks. She staggered back.
Mom!
I cried. For a horrible, long moment, she teetered on the edge, fighting gravity. I leapt up, racing to grab her, pull her back, somehow save her. But the tiger wrapped a massive arm around me and held me down. She fell, disappeared from sight.
No, no, no!
Hang on, Marco,
Jake said.
Hang on, man. Hang on, man.
He held me that way, pinned down. The strength of his tiger morph made my own strength insignificant.
Hang on, Marco. Hang on, man.
Dimly, as though I was watching it on an out-of-focus TV, I was aware that battle raged on the opposite peak. I knew that more Hork Bajir had joined the battle. I knew that an Andalite was leading them. That they were pushing back the tide of the Visser's troops. The Free Hork Bajir. Axe had brought them from the real colony, miles away. In the sky, a battle raged between the Empire ship and the Blade ship with its fighters. Not my problem anymore. Nothing was my problem. All I had to do was listen to the voice in my head saying,
Hold on, Marco. Hold on, man. Hold on.
Chapter 30. I stayed in bed for most of the next week. Sick. At least, that's what I told my dad. I lay there, staring at soap operas and Jerry Springer and old movies. I don't know how I'd gotten down off that mountain. Or made it home. I was gone during all that. Gone to a place in my head. Jake came and saw me. He told me how Cassie had seen Vister 3's limo pulling in. They'd realized they were trapped. They'd gone, at emergency speed, back to Roachmorphs. They figured nothing was going to kill a roach. Cassie had been all the way into Morph before Vister 3 fried the car. Jake had only been halfway morphed. He'd been hurt. Burned. Unconscious. Cassie had stayed to care for him, bringing him back to consciousness at the last minute, just in time to demorph. Jake had been seconds away from a lifetime trapped as something half-roach, half-human. I listened to what he had to say. Listened to how Vister 3 had escaped. How the Free Hork-Bajir had lost 5 of their people in the battle. I didn't care. He went away, and I flipped the channels with my remote control. 2 more days passed, and Rachel came to see me. She sat in my chair and put her feet up on my desk.
"There's no body," she announced.
"What?" I asked distractedly. I flipped through 12 more channels.
"Vister 1, your mother. I searched. An eagle morph. There's no body."
I felt my insides tighten. "The Yurks clean up their messes. Destroyed the evidence." She shook her head.
"No. The Yurks Dracon the corpses. There are burn marks all over that hill. But nothing down there where your mother fell."
The scene flashed back. Another channel on the TV. The My Mother Falling to Her Death show. I saw her fall. Slow motion. I saw the bugfighter roaring past. Could it have reached her? No. Impossible. "Nice try, Rachel," I said. She shrugged.
"I'm telling you what I saw. I wouldn't lie."
"Sure you would," I said. "Pity. Charity. Make Marco feel better."
"No, because it wouldn't make you feel better. It wouldn't be pity or charity. I wouldn't be doing you a favor. You've cried and yelled and hated yourself. It's bad, but if she's dead, at least it would be over. If she's alive."
I didn't say anything. She sighed and got up to leave. She touched the doorknob and I said, "Rachel?" I was going to do it. Then, I wasn't. I was trying to kill her. And save her. What do you do?
Do?
What do you do when you have to make a decision, and each choice is horrible? What would you do, Rachel? If it was your mom, or dad, or sisters. What would you do, Xena?
Me?
She sighed.
I guess I'd hope that someone would come along and take that decision away from me.
Like Jake did to me.
Yeah.
What if she isn't dead? What if she really did survive? Oh, God. What if there's a next time? Rachel came back and sat beside me on the bed. She didn't hug me. Rachel's not a hugger. But she sat there with me.
One battle at a time, Marco. One battle at a time.
Not much of an answer, but the only answer I had.
"Try the movie channel,"
Rachel said. I aimed the remote control. "Mama, we're all full of lies. Well, mother was the wand into my legs and to my tongue. You should have raised a baby girl. I should have been a better son. If you could count on the infection, they can amputate it once. You should have been, I could have been a better son. And when we can roleplay
murder." Hello, Phantomorphs, and thank you for listening to another episode of Audiomorphs, the Animorphs Auditory Experience. As always, this is your host, Daniel. And here we are, finished with another book. Right after the Megamorphs, these ones really feel like they just breeze by, huh? But, yeah, we're done with book 30. It got a lot more intense than, not that I expected, but, it did take me a little bit by surprise. You know, it's a common theme among, adult Animorphs fans. It's like, wow, these books are, like, actually, contain much more of an emotional wallop than you'd think for a children's series. And here I am, once again, saying, wow, this scene contained a lot more of an emotional wallop than you'd think from a children's series, but such is, when you're right, you're right, and Animorphs adult fans are right when they say that. So, it's been a busy day. I've been doing a lot of job interviews, knock on wood, by this time, in book 31, I'll be employed again. No one jinx it, please. Sorry, to get back on track, though, I have a message from Willis the Arts, that's through the Tumblr, that's audiomorphscast.tumblr.com. He writes in and says, "When Marco made that Prince of Egypt joke, I instantly was like, Marco, man, WTF, don't start joking around at this point. I don't really know how this book is going to turn out. I know how I'd like it for it to go, but that hardly ever happens. Unrelated, I had an interesting thought on my ride to work. I'm curious how difficult it would be to impersonate someone on ThoughtSpeak. Some people are naturally gifted at voice mimicry, or learn how. I wonder if it's the same with ThoughtSpeak, or if you don't really have control over the exact way you sound. I know that the Animorphs will change their vocabulary and rhythm to hide their identity, but I wonder if they could trick someone into thinking that they were a wholly different person." Signed, Willis the Arts. Yeah, the Marco Prince of Egypt joke, it is interesting, right? Because sometimes they make a point about how they try not to talk to Visser 3 because they're a bunch of kids. But sometimes they do, and when they do, I do feel like they don't sound very Andalite. They use a lot of, I don't know, I guess Axe uses a couple contractions, but maybe this is just my pop culture sense of aliens kind of seeping in. So, you know, when you think about aliens in pop culture, or at least the ones that are, like, human enough, you know, like, just to the left of human, your Spocks, or Klingons, or, you know, what have you. It's always sort of kind of like, you know, they speak almost a little robotically. There's not a lot of, like, slang or contractions or things like that. They don't use can't, they use cannot, you know what I mean? But Axe will sometimes use can't, so who could say? I always, whenever I read them speaking to Visor Theory, I always think to myself, that's not how I would speak if I were trying to disguise the fact that I'm a kid. But he never catches on, so I guess they're doing fine. But yeah, I guess they had to take it a step further for this scene to play off. And, you know, I can no prize it, because Marco talks a lot about how humor is his coping method, mechanism. And, you know, obviously this is a very emotionally high-stakes situation for him in a way that he's not totally used to. And so I could definitely see him not even realizing it, turning to... Which, I mean, is what he says, as we find out. He says, subconsciously, oh my god, I wanted her to know who I was. I gave the game away because I needed this. And so it all works, but it is a little jarring, because it's like, Marco, man, come on. But he's also 12, and that's his mom. So, you know. As for the second part of this question, or message, it's not really a question. It's called an ask on Tumblr, so I guess that's where my mind is. Yeah, I've always... The thought speech thing has always been sort of intentionally ill-defined. We're not really sure exactly what one sounds like in thought speak. I know when they first speak with Alfangor, they describe it as sort of like images that then... sort of then crystallized into thoughts in their brain, because, you know, obviously Andalites being fully telepathic wouldn't have any sort of, like, actual language in the way we'd understand it with vocal sound. But anyway, I don't know, it's brain-to-brain communication, I truly couldn't say, and I guess that's also here in the book, they also couldn't say, they weren't for sure if, Visser 1 would recognize Marco's thought speak, but they thought, you know, let's not risk it if we don't have to. But then they had to. And even then, it took her a minute to place it. So I don't know. I guess it's not quite your spoken voice. Regardless, there's some sort of, your personality maybe definitely, but whatever your mind is interpreting is not one-to-one. Otherwise, I feel like Marco's mom would have recognized right away that that's Marco, and Visser 1 would have been able to pull that up. Instead of being like, there's something tickling the back of my host's brain. I can't quite place it. Then again, now I'm flipping around. The Yerks always say, you know, or I guess the Anthelites always say, there's no resistance to once the Yurk's inside of you. It can, you know, it digs through all the little parts of your brain, and there's nothing you can do about it. But we have seen, actually, that, for example, when Visser 3 said to go infest Melissa, Chapman and Chapman's wife both managed to temporarily retake some control of their body. And this is something I think gets developed throughout the book, that aliens, both Yurks and Andalites, are like kind of baffled by humans because humans seem to have this almost suicidal resilience or like will to go on, to the point that like it doesn't make sense to the other aliens because they're not like genetically programmed that way. Once it's clear the odds are insurmountable, it seems like aliens tend to sort of accept their fate. But humans often can and do continue to push in the face of impossible odds. And so Yurks, I don't think, are fully ready. That's why they're doing kind of the that's part of the reason they're doing the soft culture infestation sort infiltration sort of thing, right? Is because voluntary human hosts are much, much easier to control for these Yurks than unwilling ones. Unwilling ones, it sounds like, are quite a pain. We remember back in the last Megamorphs, Visser 4 was driven so crazy by John Barrowman reciting Shakespeare that he tried to murder the King of England to prevent that play from existing. Right? So it seems like there's, you know, our understanding of Yurk's total control is not as total as they are claiming. And so maybe I'm saying Marco's mom did recognize Marco's thought speak, and using the willpower that comes from being a mother, being a parent, managed to somewhat shield that from Visser 1. Visser 1 knew that her host recognized that thought speak, but couldn't figure out where that her host recognized it from. That's like, we even get in the book, she like her eyes like roll back as she turns inward to try to pry that out of her host. Marco interprets that as trying to dig deep in like some buried memory, but I think maybe Marco's mom was actually protecting him there. Which is a cool, I think that's cool. Anyway, thanks for writing in, Willis. That's the only message I got this week. If you'd like to write in, you can do that through the aforementioned Tumblr. That's audiomorphscast.tumblr.com. You can do the Gmail. That's audiomorphscast@gmail.com. And you can do it through my website. That's theapocalypse.com. The apocalypse, like apocalypse, but with a D in the middle. You can also tweet at me at audiomorphs, and that's where you should check if I'm ever late uploading. For example, if I thought I couldn't finish this week, I would have told you on Twitter. But I did finish, so we're cool. And then, as always, I will be getting the supercut out hopefully next week. And then we will continue on into book 31, which is... I actually have it right in front of me, because I own this one physically. It's The Conspiracy. It's the one where he's morphing a falcon. Jake's morphing a falcon on the cover. So, get ready for that. And with that, thank you all for listening to another book with me, and I will see you all next week. My name is Daniel. I believe one day the Andalites will come. Until then, we fight.